Woche. We're moving into Shavuos. We're in the very great charged days of the Shlishis and Hagbalah. Basically, leading up to our great rendezvous with Hashem. Before I get to our subject, I just want to frame the whole discussion in general. You know, we say in Dayenu, it's a famous question. Had Hashem brought us to Har Sinai, but not given us the Torah, that would have been sufficient. The question that hits pretty much everybody is, what does that mean exactly? Bring us to Har Sinai and not give us the Torah? It's kind of like saying, now I'll give you a ride to the bus stop, but there are no buses from there. What's the idea? And the answer is, there's the famous answer that all the kids come home with. You've heard it or you didn't, but I want to give the depth. I don't know what the source of that answer is. Basically, what the nusuch that they say is that if you come into a perfume store, and even if you don't buy anything, you go out with the scent of the perfume. What is that? So, let's really give the to really appreciate what happened at Hasina. We have to understand that actually it's very, very powerfully so. That Dayenu, that would have been enough to establish us as Am Hashem forever if we appreciate what actually happened there, and it's worthwhile to appreciate that. You know what? I'm kind of following an old habit of mine. I don't know if I'm going to get to our subject, but I'm going to start with the preface and see where we go. We've talked about Pesach. We've talked about appreciating, and I'm not going to go through it now at length, the magnitude of what happened there, what Hashem was showing Klal Yisrael there. Remember, we discussed how Be'etzem in Mitzrayim was where Hashem was introducing himself to us. That was really the essence of what was happening there. I'll repeat very briefly Reb Shimshon Pinkus's statement that when Hashem comes and tells us, this was actually yesterday, Beis Sivan is known as, in the Sfarim, as the Yom HaMiyuchas. Call it the, not sure how to translate that exactly, but the great day with the capital G. That was the day where Hashem came and made us the statement of Atem Tiyuli Mamleches Kayanim and V'Goy Kodesh. These days leading up to Shavuos are the days of the back and forth between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. So Hashem comes and says, he opens his marriage proposal, we'll put it that way, with the words, Atem Re'isem Yisrael Sisi. You saw everything I did in Mitzrayim. I probably said this here in this forum a number of times, but I'll just repeat it briefly again. The Shimshon Pinkus brings it out as follows. He says that in a shidduch, if a man is proposing marriage to a woman, so there's mainly two things she wants to know about him. A, who are you? And B, do you love me? One without the other won't do. Right? I have to have an idea of what you're about, what type of person you are. You can be the greatest person in the world. You can be the greatest person in the world, but if you don't care about me, it's not going to work. Or you can love me dearly, but if you're a lowlife, it's not going to work. I have to know both of those things. Those are the two key questions that you need to know in order to accept a marriage proposal. So what Hashem is coming and saying is, you saw everything I did in Mitzrayim. There I showed you the answer to both questions. I showed you who I am, and I showed you how much I care about you. I showed you my love for you there. That was really the essence of everything that happened in Mitzrayim, like we discussed back then. I'm recapping the shiur that we had before Pesach. If the idea was to get them out of Mitzrayim, Hashem could have made Paro have a change of heart, wake up one morning in a magnanimous mood and say, guys, slavery is wrong. I'm letting you go. But it would have been plenty easy for Hashem. But the truth is that Hashem brought them into Mitzrayim in the first place for the purpose of showing them these two things, who he is and how much he cares about them. And therefore, he went through the process of tearing apart all the rules of nature and tearing apart the mightiest empire in the world and introducing the whole world to a new concept of Elokei HaElohim, right? The one supreme Elohim. All the mightiest forces of nature, what were thought of as the mightiest gods, were all his humble servants. That was the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it was for the purpose of setting the stage for creating that eternal bond with Klal Yisrael. Call it marriage, call it turning them into his children. All these different metaphors are true. But the point is, I'm taking you to me forever. Do you want to join? And that's what he showed them there for that purpose. Set the stage for that.
So why did they suffer for how many hundreds of years before, and many generations never saw any of that? They just died thinking Hashem had abandoned them, probably.
Why did all the people leading up to that point suffer?
And drop to the 49th level of Tumah or whatever.
Right.
What was the point of that?
So there's no question that Hashem put the Bnei Yisrael through a process. They had to be able to render themselves worthy of going through that process. So that was the process that prefaced it. That's in very short. We'll also add to that the people who died leading up to it, that wasn't the end of their story. They went to Gan Eden as the people who were sacrificed for setting the foundations of Klal Yisrael. That puts them in a very high place. But we'll just consider that a brief touch. So Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim enthralled. Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim like they wanted nothing other than just to be connected to Hashem. And they were thrilled by the idea that this great Elohim views them as his children. He's taking them close to him. And therefore, they actually came as they saw everything they saw. And Machas Bechiras was like the greatest revelation that had been in the world up until that point. And that culminated, Hashem was basically catapulting them from level to level, bringing them from the lowest of depths, and that's part of the answer to your question also. Hashem brought them down to the lowest of depths in order to shoot them up to the greatest heights for that experience. Again, in order to imprint on them in a very powerful way that burning enthusiasm for their connection with him. And he catapults them to Makas Bechiras, and then from there to Kriyas Yamsuf, which is a whole new level of revelation. And as much as they're seeing, they're awed by the fact that he's taking us to him, leads them into the Midbar, and all of nature is just like melting at Hashem's approach. And they came with a brazen request. They said, he's showing us so much. They're seeing more of Hashem and more of Hashem. They came with a statement, Ritzoneinu liras es malkeinu. We want to meet our king. We want to see him, Gibeah. Brazen request. We want that much more exposure. And this request actually gave Hashem nachas. And Hashem says, okay, that's really the idea here. You're going to have to work toward it. After everything you saw at Bechiras, at Kriyas Yamsuf, now you're going to have to work through those 49 days of Sfira, prepare yourself for the ultimate rendezvous, for the great meeting, great personal meeting between you and Hashem at Har Sinai, which is described in the Pasuk as Hevi'ani HaMelech HaDoro, right? Hashem brought us close to him in the most innermost chambers. That's what this was about. And basically what happened at Har Sinai, if you really connect to what's going on, that after all this, they came there and they heard the most hair-raising words that a human being could hear. Gevayach, like all the Shemaim are opened up, and you hear the words being addressed to you in a personal way. Let me introduce myself. I am Hashem. If you really think about it, you can mamish have a quiver go through your body. These are the most earth-shattering words that were ever heard in history. That was the effect of Har Sinai. It was the meeting between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, that very great rendezvous. And if we understand that, all those experiences were what set Klal Yisrael on fire. This was Hashem's divine plan. It set them on fire with dedication to Hashem, that the momentum continues until today. We have to realize that that's what we are still running off. It's that momentum. It's that enthusiasm. That's what put into the blood of Klal Yisrael, the readiness to go through fire and water for him. And you know what? These days also are actually direct memorials for that too. These are the Crusades. The real precedents that we have of mass martyrdom are also mamish in these days, the Crusades. Had it stopped at that, Dayenu. If we don't really appreciate this, then the question doesn't even begin. It's true. Mamad Har Sinai, in and of itself, before you come, even come on to the giving of the Torah, was Dayenu. And now we can go crossroads here. Either go on to the next stage of the actual giving of the Torah, or to take a step back and really just focus on this a little bit. And I'm going to go with the latter. That was what actually I said was going to be our subject today. We're actually starting it. But here, I want to make a little bit of a shift in course. And I want to move over, like, let's take a full stop here. And I want to move over to look at the lives of two specific figures who get attention on Shavuos. Namely, Rus. Yeah. Well, I was going to talk about David HaMelech. David HaMelech, her great great grandson, not great great grandson, her great great grandson, great grandmother, and the great grandson. I want to focus on them a little bit in order to really bring home the significance of that statement, the Menorah Hashem Elokecha. Who's Rus? Now let's see if we spend a little bit of time on each of them and then round circle back to all of us. Who is Rus? Rus was a non-Jewish princess, Moabite girl. What was Moab about? Moab was about the ancient pagan nations, low morals, everything, all the problems described in Tanakh about the early nations. And completely out of the limelight, out of the focus of Hashem, Klal Yisrael, etc., etc. Just what? Rus had a quality neshama. And she had a sincerity to her and a seeking of the truth. Where is she going to find it? She had no idea where to look for it. But there was in her that desire to connect to truth, to be living right, etc., etc. At the same time, in Eretz Yisrael, there was a family who made a wrong decision. The family of Elimelech, Naomi, and their two children decided they were going to desert. Things were tough in Eretz Yisrael. You have to appreciate that in those times, there were no Jews outside of Eretz Yisrael. There was no Jewish community in Chutz Laaretz. This meant basically severing your ties with the Jewish nation. Now, they didn't intend to do it forever, etc. But you know how the nature of these things were. They made a wrong decision. But the way Hashem operates is that he uses things for his purposes. So here's this non-Jewish girl out there, no shaychus to anything, but Hashem spotted her. Hashem spotted her. This is sincerity of a level that deserves my attention. She, with her sincerity, she deserves to be pulled into my embrace. She deserves to be pulled into the fold. That's what Hashem basically did. He reached out for her and pulled her in. How did he do it? He brought together two paths. They were on their way down. She was on her way up. So Hashem brought the two together. They went to Chutz Laaretz. It's a failure on their part, a mistake on their part. But Hashem used that to net this special neshama that Hashem was attracted to because of her seeking him, because of her looking for him, trying to connect with him. So he brought them to her. Like we said, they were on their way down. We have to be careful when we talk about this because they were on a much higher level than we can imagine. And on the contrary, for Rus, they were the exposure, they were the introduction to everything good. They were. When she joined this family, she was with Arpa. She joined this family, she discovered this is everything I was looking for in terms of the standards, in terms of the MS, in terms of the quality of the family. and connection with Hashem through this family. She discovered Hashem. She discovered the real Bayre. And she discovered standards and quality of human beings that were just not existent in where she grew up. And she became both a member of the family and a Talmida of the family. And then, and Arpa was with her at that point, fine. And then we know what happened. Melech died, and Machling died, and Kilian died. And Naomi is now coming back to be Metaken, the mistake of leaving Eretz Yisrael. She's on her way back. And Rus and Arpa are going along with her. And then she turns to them, and we learn, right, we use Rus as the model for, sorry, Naomi is the model for the way we relate to when a person comes and wants to convert. We begin by dissuading them, discourage it. And that's what Naomi does. And Orpa, at one point, turns back, okay. But Rus keeps pushing. Rus keeps pushing. And she says some significant words. The Gra makes a big deal about these words. She says, "Al tifki ibi le'ozveich l'shuv me'acharei. Please don't try to convince me. Don't keep pushing me to leave you, to turn back from behind you." Let's just ask ourselves a question. What was Rus's agenda when she's pushing to go with Naomi? What was her agenda? Was her agenda the Beinot HaMachaberei aspect, to take care of Naomi? Was it the Beinot HaMachaberei aspect, the desire to become a member of the Jewish nation, to become a Geirus? Which was it? What's that? Oh, the Gra says that's what we see in these words, that she was on both tracks with full dedication, full intensity. This was about Beinot HaMachaberei. This was a woman who had given me so much, I got so much from her. And now she's in such a, headed for such a tough life. I'm not going to desert her no matter what. And she understood. Naomi spelled this out for her. She understood she's headed for a life of loneliness, of poverty, not going to be accepted, etc. But there's no way I'm leaving you. My life is going to be dedicated to taking care of you. That's, don't push me, le'ozveich. I don't want to leave you. I'm not going to leave you. And number two is l'shuv me'achareich. I don't want to go back. After I discovered the emes here, this is, I'm not saying agenda number one, agenda number two. These were two agenda number ones. The full intensity of, I found the emes. I found Hashem. There's no way I'm going back. There's no way I'm going back. I want to connect to Hashem at all costs. Again, even if it means a life of poverty, of anonymity, of rejection, this is what I want. Al tifki ibi, right, when she responds to Naomi, Naomi tells her, go back, what do you need this for? She responds by saying, Al tifki ibi, le'ozveich, l'shuv me'acharech. Don't convince me to leave you or to turn back from you. The Gra says that here she expressed both of the different agendas. So this here we're seeing the picture of who Rus was, the quality of this woman, the pneumius of this woman. And she goes on with the famous pasuk, which we're not going to get into now, right? Basher tolchi elech, etc. Amecha mi elikayech elikoy, basher tomusi amus. She throws in her lot entirely. Really, it would be kedai to go through that pasuk slowly, but we don't have the time. And what happens? Taka, she comes back with Naomi. Naomi is a lonely, sickly, poor, broken woman. She comes back with her to Eretz Yisrael, and they're ready to start a life of two paupers. And here, she doesn't realize it, but she is intensely under Hashem's focus right now. Hashem is actually taking her and turning her kaviyachol into a personal project. She doesn't realize that she's headed for all the way at the top. Where does she end up at the end of the day? Chazal say she apparently outlived many of her descendants, but she actually ended up on a throne next to Shlomo. That's right, next to Shlomo HaMelech. She saw her great-great-grandson ultimately at the peak of Malchus Yisrael, and she was the mother of all that. That's where she came from, an outsider who then became a poor nobody trying to push her way into Eretz Yisrael. And here we see how Hashem is immediately starting to manipulate things, pulling her closer and closer. She goes out. Where the poor, the way Eretz Yisrael is set up, the way Hashem has it set up for his people, is that poor people have places to get food. All the dinim of Leket, Shikra, and Peah was a very significant source of sustenance for the poor. There was a lot of produce that between those three halachas were left for the taker. And she goes out to look for a field like the many hordes of poor people were doing. Then it was the harvest season. And where does she come to of all the fields? Hashem guides her directly to the field of Boaz, and we know the continuation of the story. She becomes, we call it Ima shel Malchus. What's this a story of? If we're just talking about the gist of the story, the essence of the story is about an individual, single person who really reached out for Hashem. It's late, and Hashem kebiyachol stuck out his hand, pulled her in all the way close, all the way close into his tight embrace. Now let's fast forward. Story of Rosh deserves a lot more. I think that one year we actually did it for a couple of weeks. We did it, right?
Text, yeah.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right. It'll be worthwhile doing it again one of these years. But now we'll fast forward our great grandson to David. Here's the story of David HaMelech. David HaMelech was born in the fold, but it was a similar story. David HaMelech was an outcast. David HaMelech wasn't born as an outsider. He was born into one of the most noble aristocratic families of the Jewish people, Yishai. Yishai was the Gadol HaDor. But David might sound strange, it's even hard to say the words. David was considered an embarrassment to the family. This was a family, one after the other, of very impressive, dignified, high-quality people. David was born. He was the different child in a very significant way. He was born with a difficult personality. It's hard to even say these words. We know we're saying it because we want to draw off of one of the most awe-inspiring profiles that we have in our history. One of the most brilliant stars in our history is David HaMelech. But Avigdor Miller said, I can't tell you this, but I'm saying it on his authority, that David HaMelech is the name most mentioned in Tanakh. It was more than 1,000 times, more than Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's a figure that if you just really study his life, what's so amazing about it is how relevant it is. Dafka because of the fact that he was not born that perfect sterling person. He was born with a difficult package. That's what the Mefarshim tell us. So that was it. Shaul made one mistake and was rejected. So David made more than one mistake. He wasn't rejected. The big difference that the Mefarshim says is that Shaul was one of those classic biography stories. You know, about how from the age of 1 month old, they could tell that he was going to be the Gadol HaDor, that by the age of 6 months, he knew all of Shas, etc. You know, the standard story. So David HaMelech was that, sorry, Shaul was that very high, great neshama. Perfect. When he slipped, it was considered unforgivable. David HaMelech came from the other direction. Yeah, it's hard to say these things, but on the contrary, that is exactly the shining example that David HaMelech provided for us of the person who was not born with that kind of essence. It says from the Arizal, the Gro, the Rachaim, we have it on the greatest authorities. He was born with a difficult, call it character, personality, package, neshama, whatever term you'll use. And he was a passionate person with a tendency toward violence. And he wasn't in sync with the rest of the family. The rest of the family were those perfect profiles. Pride of any parent, pride of Klal Yisrael. People looked at them as, wow, this is the future of Klal Yisrael. And David was a brash, blustering youth, made all kinds of statements that just embarrassed his family. And there was even some questioning, we're not going to get into all the ins and outs about it, about his lineage. And basically, the family, they just wanted him off the scene. That's why he was sent out to be with the sheep. He was sent out. The shepherd is safely taken care of. We have a few days away from civilization, out with the sheep, safely off the scene, and not there to embarrass the family. David understood all this. David understood all this. David HaKatan. He was the youngest and the rejected, and he was out there with the sheep. Now, how is the profession of shepherding viewed in halacha? Oh, so we're going to have to line that up with what it says in halacha, that shepherds are basically suspected of all kinds of averus. They're not trusted for monetary things. A shepherd is naturally, again, I hope nobody's husband is a shepherd here, but a shepherd that has a certain, is almost like a certain automatic assumption that he's a lowlife. Why? Because people who are out of the yeshuv, they're not among people, and they're spending hours on end with nothing to do, naturally won't gravitate in the right directions. On the other hand, as you're pointing out, some of the biggest names in our history were shepherds. Avraham, Moshe, David. What's the answer? Rabbi Akiva. The answer is, if a person has hours on end alone with nothing to do, what is that going to make out of him? In most cases, right, we say, not having what to do, Hashem piles on work on us to keep us busy and out of trouble. But in those rare cases where a person knows how to utilize that time, they can bring a person to the greatest, greatest levels. David HaMelech, as a lonely outcast with all the pain of rejection, what did he do with himself there? He found company and he found solace with Hashem. He started developing a real, tangible, deep, intimate relationship with Hashem. This is what we have to learn from. He spent all those hours there connecting and growing. And not just that, he used all of his passion, all of his, even his violent tendency, to battle his own passion. That's why he is the example for us of a person who battled against himself to reach greatness. And he learned, he trained himself to channel all of that passion and even the violence into the top levels of service of Hashem. And he's out there growing in the field and growing greater and greater and greater. Meanwhile, back in town, the family is able to breathe a sigh of relief. He's off the scene. You don't have to worry about him. And life goes on. So now again, if you're in the, you know, in the center of the action, you know, who are the budding gedolim and who are the budding leaders, etc. David is completely not part of the equation, not on the radar. He's a shepherd, with everything we discussed about shepherds. And nobody knows what's actually going on out there. Almost nobody. Who knows? Hashem knows. David again was there connecting, and Hashem was connecting to him. And unbeknownst to everybody else, with his family, he's climbing and climbing and climbing. And then what happens? Then what happens? The day comes and it's time to anoint a new king. Right? We're not getting into that whole story. But the day comes and it's time to anoint a new king. Hashem tells Shmuel HaNavi, it's time to choose a new king. I want you to go to. Oh, where would anybody guess? If you had to guess, where is the new king going to come from? Can you guess the family? Yishai would be one of the first three guesses. Anybody would guess Yishai's family. It's a great family, dignified, aristocratic. Look at any of the members of the family. Wow. No surprise there. Going to Shmuel, to the house of Yishai, to Beis Lechem. Comes there. The natural assumption is that it's the Bechor. Eliyahu, impressive person, dignified, and Shmuel sees him. Said, "Ah, I see what Hashem had in mind. It's like easy to see why Hashem would pick this person." Then he gets a message from Hashem. No. That's not the man. Hashem tells him the famous words, right? Ki ha'odam yireh lo einayim, Hashem yireh lo leivav. I want to add something. Shmuel, what was he called? Shmuel was called Haroyeh. He knew how to see. If he looked at people, he saw all the way in. He saw all the way in. And yet Hashem is telling him, you're seeing a lot. Adam Yerla, he's not the man. Next son. The next son, was initially, Ach, neged Hashem Mashiach, there's the Mashiach Hashem. Until finally, you go through all six sons. Shmuel says, is there nobody else? Now it's starting to get uncomfortable. Know if they're starting to squirm or, well, there is one more, but there's something, he's not the one. Who is this? A katan out in the fields. But that's obviously not, maybe we should start again from the beginning, see, maybe call him in. Call him in. Now it's really getting embarrassing. Call David in from the fields. And David is coming. And again, I'm just talking illustrative. Okay, just about for the effect. You have to be careful here. But illustrative for the effect. And you're like, the family is like, oh no, right? And Shmuel is looking at him, and what does he see? Says Kwe Admoini, like Chazal tell us again, he knew how to look into people. He says, this person is a violent person with him. This is not the personality that we're waiting for. What does Hashem say? Hashem says, Kum mishocheo ki hu zeh. What does Hashem say? Kum mishocheo, what about Shmuel Hanavi, the greatest of Nevi'im, put in the lead with Moshe and Aaron. Hashem says, stand up. Do you know whose presence you're in? You know whose presence you're in? David HaMelech. David, not HaMelech, right? David, the outcast, the brash, embarrassment to the family. And Hashem is telling Shmuel HaNavi, stand up. He's standing in front of the greatest person alive today. And the family is in awe and shock. Chazal goes through the psukim that we say in Halel. It says, it starts with, Yishua, right? I thank you because you afflicted me, but then you ended up being there for me, being my salvation. Chazal say that David expressed that at that time. The next pasuk was, Evan Masu. This was David's mother, who always knew that he was being misjudged. And there wasn't much she could do about it. And now she's the one expressing Evan Masu, the stone that was rejected by the builders. You can't use this for building, ended up the foundation of the whole building. And the brothers are saying, Hashem understands what's happening here because we just don't get it. This is concealed from our eyes. Shmuel HaNavi ties it all up with, this is a very great day of celebration for Kalim. We can go on and on about David HaMelech in order to really appreciate what we've been learning here. It's also worthwhile. Maybe it's worth dedicating a whole shiur to that, or a whole bunch of shiur. But we're not going to do that now. We're just going to bring out this common denominator between the story of the great grandmother and the story of the great grandson. It's about that person who would not have naturally been on the radar, but there's that person out there. Hashem is attracted to the person who reaches out for him. Hashem is attracted to the person who seeks him out. And we'll reach out for that person. The person sticks out his hand, and Hashem kiviyachol reaches out, pulls him very close. Will it always take the form of becoming the king? That'll get a little too crowded. But that yisoid is there. When a person is there reaching out for Hashem, Hashem is pulling them close. Hashem is pulling them close. And this, now let's circle back to all of us when we're talking about standing at Har Sinai and hearing that declaration of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Be'etzem, that's the message. That's really the message. Now, I want to just punctuate that with another thing that I believe we've said here. Let's go back to David's original matriarch, Leah. And Hirsch makes the point that is interesting. Rachel was considered the main wife of Yaakov Avinu, the prized wife. Yet, where did the most chashuv shvatim come from? Who are the most highest level shvatim? Levi, Yehuda, they come from Leah. Rav Hirsch says something amazing. He says that it's dafka because of the fact that Leah felt the loneliness, the rejection, right? That she was the pain of not being the beloved wife by her husband. Now, you have no doubt that Yaakov gave her all the treatment that a Jewish wife deserves. But yet, that pain of not being the beloved one and that sense of loneliness, what'd she do with that? I've heard said she knew what to do with it. Again, just like we talked about, sorry? The pain of the loneliness, of the rejection, what'd she do with it? So she knew what to do with it. Rav Hirsch says, like we just described, that just like her descendant, she took it to Hashem. She used Hashem to cry on. She used Hashem to take her feelings to. And that's where she found the rich relationship. And Kevi'ochel, Hashem pampered her in that way. This was her, the relationship that she created with him was what brought on her that shower of bracha. And she ended up with the greatest shvatim, and the mother to the greatest shvatim. This is Batsim, what the message that's being leveled to each of us is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Right? Klal Yisrael, it's 2 million strong are standing at the foot of Har Sinai. And yet Hashem doesn't say Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am all of your God in a collective way. Hashem is addressing each individual as being addressed on a personal basis. And each of us was there on a personal basis and being told, I am your own Kibiyachal personal Elohim. And that's a message that was said then, but it's reverberating ever since. It's in the air. It's in the air, and each of us can choose to be conscious, to be attuned to that constant call of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I am there to be Kibiyachal your own personal Elohim. If you reach out for me, I'm right there. I'm right there, and I'll be pulling you close. The road can take different twists and turns. The road can take different twists and turns. But you can rest assured that I am there reaching out for you, pulling you close to me. And that's the message to hear. The whole night of learning, it says in the Sfarim that really the whole night of learning, Mendub on Shavuos, is really all a build-up. That's why it's a little ironic. Shacharis Hitzim, we're out, we're starting to, heads are hitting the shtender. But it's ironic because really it's a build-up, it says in the Svarim, to hearing the words Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's a to hearing it being said anew each year. If you're going to be in shul, appreciate the moment. If you're not going to be in shul, read it from a chumash. Read it from a chumash. Ramchal tells us that the words of the Tereshim B'Ksav are alive and they're talking to you. It's again being addressed to you in a very personal way. Every year again, Hashem is making that declaration, and that declaration stays in the air, there for the taking, there directed toward you, focused on you. So here we come back to this is Ma'amad Har Sinai even before coming on to the whole discussion. What else I'm going to say to you? We should be zoichet to hear that call, to really let it hit us and impact us and respond to it in kind and earn all of the wealth and the rich relationship with Hashem that He's offering us. Bezos Hashem.
What about the story of Goliath? That didn't show something about the other before?
Oh, the story of Goliath. Oh, that's really worth. If you're going to mention anything about David HaMelech, you're going to tempt me to go on for half an hour. But the story of Goliath certainly did. He had already been anointed. That was in that in-between stage where he had been anointed, but nobody was supposed to know it, right? But the truth is, on the contrary, that story exactly reflected who he was in all the different aspects. Just to run through it very briefly, his reality where all of Klal Yisrael were terrified of the man. David comes and says, "What? And Orel is threatening the Maalachas?" It just makes no sense. And Orel is threatening Jews? It just, in his mind, there was no such thing. And again, his brothers respond, "This is David making those blustering, come on, understand, get the matzav, right? Don't come." And he's the one, David, the young kid shows up, he's not even part of the army. He shows up, he's bringing a package to his brothers. He said, "What? Who could be threatening us? I'm gonna, can you sit down, sit back down and keep quiet?" He didn't understand that this was really his essence burning in him. All of Klal Yisrael is scared, but he couldn't see a reality of an Orel. For him, an Orel was like the most despicable thing in the world. He couldn't see a reality of threatening a Ben Kel Chai. And therefore, it's exactly reflected when David goes out there and says, forget the armor. And Chazal say exactly what's going on there. And Shaul offered him his armor. And David's like, forget the armor. He goes out with his slingshot, no weapons or anything. And Goliath comes and says, he's insulted. This is what you're sending to fight me. A ruddy kid, you're sending to fight me. And David, really be worth it to see the rich Lushan that he uses when he responds to Goliath. It's kind of like saying, what are you even thinking? I'm coming with Hashem behind me. There's no fight here. All the rest of Klal Yisrael is quaking. But this is David's reality. There's no contest here. There's no contest. It wasn't even bravery. It was like, what are we talking about? We're talking about an Orel against Hashem. Me, I'm not really part of the picture here, but nobody else is going to represent Hashem. I'll be the one to do it. And therefore, he goes out there without any compunctions at all and just sends his stone out. Yes, that's exactly a reflection of the David we're talking about. Maybe we should dedicate next week's Shir Bli Neder to just talk a little bit more about David HaMelech. It's just, it goes on and on.
Against all the terrorists, they
well,
got them all the time.
we should see more and more of that. We should see more and more of that, Bezras Hashem.